time in the Radak. Radak kumo shablul. The Yiyu kumo, he's cursing his enemies. The Yiyu kumo has shablul shaholech v'nameis, that travels and melts. The semes hushem mipoalei hakefel shel mem samach samach. We actually learned this. It means to melt. Okay, b'shekel, the same grammatical form of tevel asu min bolol v'shablul husheretz hanikri belaz. I think Ramchal, you taught us this. We came across this. This is some type of a slug. Okay, next. Now here's really where we were up to. We didn't do this part yet. V'neifel, I mean, in the Radak, page 509, on the second to last wide line, toward the very end of the Radak's parish, in the middle of the page. V'neifel eishes bal chazu shamesh v'yiyu kumo neifel huisha ki zevezelo rohu shamesh. According to the Radak, when it says b'loshon rabim loy chazu, it's going back both on the shablul and the neifel isha. Because when the shablul, when the sun shines, it runs away. Ki zevezel loy roh shamesh hashablul shehu miskase besuch kiliposa. Now, like I told you, I made a mistake. Over here, the shablul, it's sheltered in its shell. Now, that's a little bit... Oh, right. So it sounds more like a snail. We kept on saying that it's a slug. And it's disgusting as it dissolves, and like, yeah, like, you know, I'm familiar with these things from sukkahs, during sukkahs time. My backyard, I put up the sukkah.
Slug is basically the snail without the shell.
Yeah?
Right.
That's what it is? Okay. Yeah. And so snails leave over residue? They do?
Okay.
When I put up the sukkah in the backyard, I don't have a finished backyard. Backyard is basically just earth and a little concrete here and there. And they're always, we always have slugs. What?
A video of a guy in Purim.
Yeah, I saw that, right. I saw that video, it's cute. That was from Eretz Yisrael, right? That was from Eretz Yisrael, that video. In America, they would have run over him.
They'd sue him.
What? He would then sue them for running over him, right? But Eretz Yisrael, I think it's more in the, what I understand, that Purim is mamish, it's in the air. It's in the air, you can't, you have to be tolerant of it.
It just occurred to me that, you know, he's been talking about supposed allies who betrayed him, right?
Correct.
Of a mole, you know, at least in all the spy books.
Yeah, why do they call a mole in all the spy books
because
a mole?
He's very deep burrows into the organization.
Ah, that's why.
Yeah.
He burrows. Okay, I didn't understand that. I know the term mole, you know, you leave your spy stuff, you know, right, mole. Because buried deep down inside. Okay, so that's exactly what's happening over here. He's calling them a mole. He's like, since they betrayed him, these were his closest people, and they betrayed him. They were moles. Came okay, back to the Radak. The Radak over here says that it's like this creature that doesn't have a shell. I'm sorry, let me go back to the Radak. Okay, it's the Hashablul Shu Miskaseb Sechlipasa Shehilo Kimo Lavush. The shell is his garment. The Chenanefel Kimo Shomer Kioilim Loy Rohor, like Oilim, which based on stillborns. Rabbi Seinu. Okay, I'm turning the page over here to page 511. Rabbi Seinu Perish, Zal Perishu, Nefel Eishes, Beria She'en Lo Einayim. Okay, so this is what Rashi said. We're dealing with the Tenshemes, a creature that does not have eyes. She'amu B'mishnah, Sodin. This is what it says in the Likutei Shas. We didn't read the Likutei Shas yet. The Likutei Shas is a Mishnah in Mesechta Moed Katan. Sodin esho ishus vi esho akborim bistei halavon uvistei ilon kidarkon bamoyed uvashvius. You're allowed to trap these creatures on Yom Tif and in the year of Shemitah. The Ambi Gemara, what's the chiddush? The chiddush of it, I don't know the Mishnah. What it refers to? What the lumbus is? The Ambi Gemara, my ishus Amr Yehuda bria she'ein lo einayim. Good morning, Afrelikon Shushan from Rabbi Wolf.
I just spoke to Shushan Purim.
In Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, just spoke to
okay, Baruch Hashem, that today is their day.
They still say in Ralamis.
Yeah.
They say
in Ralamis. They say Ralamis all year round.
Okay, let's learn.
Every minute, right.
It's a Bria She'ein lo inayim makara nefel, and in fact, this is the source. The Gemara says, the Gemara there, in Moikon, cites this as the source, nefel eshes baal chozu shamesh v'hu hatin shemes dimit hargeminon oshusa. Okay, so it's actually is the Gemara, and what's so I guess the sugya there, when it comes to moed, it's you're not allowed to do melacha. We all know that you're not allowed to do melacha on chol hamoed, and you're not allowed to work the land in the year of shemitah. But these creatures cause damage, and therefore it's a dover ha'ovud, and a dover ha'ovud is permitted, of course, on chol hamoed and even in shemitah. One of the Likutei Shas, more appreciation, Likutei Shas on page 5:10.
It's not bettering the land, it's saving.
It's saving the land, right? That's the difference. So let's see what we hear in the Chazal on Pasuk Tes on page 5:10. K'may Shabalul Tenes, Yahaloch, Nefel Eshes. This creature called the Eshes that either it just falls down to the ground. I thought it meant that it was buried deep in the ground, Lashon Nefila. Okay? Baal Chazu Shomesh. Sodin es ha'ishus b'mod, you are permitted to trap these creatures in the year of b'mod and chol ha'mod, and it's not called a melacha. I mean, it's a melacha. It's obviously, it's probably even skilled labor to know how to trap it, but it's a davar ha'ovid. Uva shvius, even on shvius, you're not allowed on shvius to work the land. Why? In the brackets, the editor explained, shemafsidin es ha'sodos, because it's damaging the land. Dover ha'ovud is permitted both in Anchol HaMoed and in Shemitah. Mo Mai Ishus, what is the name of this creature?
What are you reading now?
The Likutei Shas, page 5:10. 5:10 on the very, very bottom. The first Likutei Shas, the third line. Mai Ishus, Om Rabbi Huda Beriya She'en Lo Inayim. V'choyferes Bekarkot burrows into the ground. Omar Rova Bar Yishmuel V'itemur Avyem Bar Shelemya. Mikra, this is the makar. This was this mamash the gemara. This pasuk is the source of how we know that this creature is where this creature is. Kimay shabalul temes yahaluk. That's the first part. Hayotze min artikoy v'nimoch kach. It leaves its sheath and it dissolves. Okay, it sheds its shell. Some creature which sheds its shell and dissolves. Neifel ishes ha'ishois noiflois umesois. They fall. The Gemara over here, the way he's going over here, the editor, is that the word nefila is modifying. It's not two concepts, a nefil and an eshes, which Rashi suggested. And Rashi told us, do not be concerned with the absence of the vav, but he's learning nefil eshes, means the word nefil is coming to modify the word eshes. This is a creature which falls to the earth. Nefil eshes, ho eshois, noiflois, they fall. Umesois, and they die, mishum, shebal chozu shomesh. They cannot deal with seeing the sun. They rather die if they are exposed. They are exposed, and they see the sun. They can't deal with the world of reality. And they just, some people are like that also. They just completely disappear. Chuck Schumer made such a big mistake. He did a classic mistake, Chuck Schumer, yesterday. He tried to put someone in cheirim. And when you put someone in cherim, yeah. You become a bestseller. You should have come to the frum world and learn how cherims go. Abachol can't handle this, right? You know, right? What I'm saying is correct? Abachol?
Just the sight of it, yeah.
It's whatever, not for now. Not a share of politics. That's later. Later on, share of politics. What?
Who did he put in cherim?
Tucker Carlson.
Oh.
He put him in cherim. When you put someone in cherim, when you put someone in chayim, you know what happens, and you become a bestseller. Shoot the shul mikra is selling very well now here. All right, let's go about that. I don't know if you're referring to.
Probably he himself gets.
So some people, they can't deal with the world of reality. They can't deal with it, and they manage to go crazy. Over here, ishus zo chulda. What is an ishus? It is a weasel. It's a weasel.
Speaking of.
How do you know it's a chol the zeichel ledavar? Why zeichel ledavar? Nefel eshes bal chozer. So the Yerushalmi. Interesting, the Yerushalmi over here says the same thing as the Bavli. The only difference is the Yerushalmi says zeichel ledavar. It's interesting over here, the nuance of lashon between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. That's a whole sugyan of itself. Okay, let's take a look over here. Maybe look at the Malbub. Let's get a little bit, because there's such an interesting concept, this thing called the Nafel Aches. Let's look at the Malbub a little bit, just to get a little taste of what he wants to say on this creature. The Malbub is back on the previous page, a 508, Pasuk Tes, on the very, very bottom. Page 508 on the very, very bottom. Kimay Shablul. Okay, that's obviously a translation of the word he wrote down. Sheskulosoi, shekimaat, sheyigubam, yimoltu mikirbam lechoraba. Ad sheyidme ki iluhem nimasim. Now, what does it mean? It's a very unique language. The Malbim is a master of language. And he says over here that every creature in this world has their defense mechanism or their unique characteristic. Every creature has, every person. Ein l'cha adam she'ein loy shah. Every person, they have their time. Everything that Hashem created has a unique attribute. A unique attribute which they're able to use to their advantage, to outmaneuver, outsmart all of their...
A survival mechanism.
So, that's a really great term. Sheskulasa is, it's survival. That's really a good translation in this context. In this, the word sheskulasa, Chassidus Rebbe here, it's not obviously, when it's over here, sheskulasa, it doesn't mean, has a segula, it said to Hillel on a certain day, in a certain time, and baked chalas. That's not what it means over here. When it says over here, sheskulasa means, its survival mechanism is, shekimat sheyigubam, the moment, just about the moment you touch it and you think you got it, it detects that someone's onto it, measures time in different ways that we understand. Yimoltu mikirbam lecharaba, it releases from within an enormous amount of moisture. Ad sheyidme kiilu heim nimasim, it appears as if they melted and people, it's gone, it disappeared. Now, I don't know if we're referring to the same slug that Rashi and, the Shemes, he's just telling you, he's describing a creature. Is it the same creature that Rashi is describing, that the Mitsudo is describing, that the Radaka is describing? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Because one that we learned the Radaka, it has a shell, and it sheds its shell, and it melts. Fine. Maybe it's the same thing, maybe not.
Does it sound like it's a shell here?
It could be an entirely different creature it's referring to, which has similar characteristics, but it's saying over here is that this creature detects that it's under attack. Whether it's under attack by an animal, by a predator, whether it's under attack by a human being, when it senses danger, it becomes invisible. It puts on...
Not necessarily be a shell.
What is that?
It could just be its outer...
Hey, look, shesgulasoi. Its unique attribute, its survival mechanism is shekimat sheyigubam. When just as you're about to touch it, just as it's about to be captured, it obviously senses it's in danger and has a very, very swift reflexes to protect itself. What does it do? Yimoltu mikirbam lechoraba. It secretes a lot of mucus. And what is the purpose of doing this? Achayidne, it's like magic. It gives the appearance to the predator that it's gone. It melted. There's no one here. There's no one to attack. Invisible. It's a magician. Achayidne ki iluhem nimasim. And now in the parentheses, v'yodua sh'alidei ha'lecha she'bom yisno a'u b'kal, through the lecha, it's able to swiftly...
But by the way, the word is schnecke, that word.
Schnecke.
German.
Yeah.
For snail.
A snail. Yeah, but a snail doesn't seem to whatever it is.
Saying,
okay, that same word, that word for it, okay. So what happens over here? Yisno a'u b'kal. It's able to move, to maneuver very easily. V'ya'al ze omar temes yahaloch. That's why it means temes. It means through yahaloch. He's saying something beautiful. He's saying something. He's explaining something that the other mafarshim did not explain. The word Yahaloch is a bit out of place over here, because according to the other Mefarshim, it seems the David is cursing his enemies, and he's basically saying that he should just melt and disappear. So what is in Yahalochu? They shall pass away. So the word Yahaloch is not the right word. Yahavar. Okay, they should just, when you want to go say that your enemy should just be gone, this Yahavar, or don't even say the word. You don't even need the word. Just say they should melt. What's this word? To walk, Yahaloichu. What the word is not the right word. So the Malbim is giving you really a very precise translation. Indeed, we're dealing with a creature who has a unique survival mechanism. When it senses danger, it secretes fluid or mucus, and this serves multiple purposes. On the one hand, it tricks the observer, the predator, to think that it's gone, it just disappeared. And the truth is it did not. But it also uses this liquid, this mucus, to swiftly escape and avoid danger. The Alzheimer, that's why Yahaloich, it moves on. It actually travels through this secretion of this liquid. Hashem gives every creature its unique survival method. I remember when drivers from 100 years ago out in the car, you know, they had to take the whole group of boys in the car at the same time, and they were driving down the block, and there are pigeons, and the driver was like petrified that if he goes too fast, he's going to kill the pigeons, he's going to run them over. So the teacher says, in all my years, oh, you're here, Mr. Rosenfeld, all my years, Mr. Rosenfeld.
Me?
You, yeah, you.
Rosenbaum,
I'm sorry. Mr. Rosenbaum, I'm sorry. See your moment. When you drive, do you ever have a situation where a student is afraid he's going to run over pigeons?
Yes.
And what do you tell them?
It'll be gone by the
time you get to them, they fly away.
They fly away. So when I was my driver that says, if you try, put on the accelerator. If you run over, I'll give you a free lesson. It never happened. They have a koyach, pigeons have a koyach, where their reflexes are much, much faster than human beings. You think you're going to go catch them. The second you get within range, they're gone. They have a tremendous koyach, in nifloy sabayim, that they have this sense. So too, these little creatures, these teeny little creatures, these slugs,
but
these snails.
With all the airplanes, they have all these pigeons.
No, the airplanes, they suck them. There's another reason. They suck it in. They suck it in. You cannot even imagine the koyach of suction of a jet engine. The jet engine can suck in an elephant. Because there's not much thrust. Thrust goes through those engines that lift up a plane. You know, how in the world do those things... You can get off the plane, you see the plane. How in the world did this thing fly over the Atlantic Ocean? Like, what? Who would believe it? You go onto the airplane, you look at that airplane. What? This thing was picked up and traveled 6,000 miles? You believe that? Well, you believe that? You believe the world is round? How in this world did this massive thing? It's unbelievable. Science, right? Trust the science. The thrust of those engines is mind-boggling. It can suck in an elephant. And when it's flying and there's a bird anywhere in its vicinity, it gets sucked right in. And it's a miracle of miracles that more birds aren't sucked into these massively powerful engines. And it's, you know, you see these videos, it's one of the biggest problems in aviation. One of the biggest problems, and no one has a solution. No one has a solution what to do for this. They have all these techniques with radar, and where they shoot them, they manage to shoot them, and they do this, they do that, they try to call them. And it's a very, very big sakana. No one can seem to figure out what to do. But these little, so that's the suctions. So that's why the bird, but otherwise, even a teeny little snail, it's just mind-boggling. The second it senses that there's a predator about to get it, it's gone. Yahaloichu, it moves on. Hashem gave it this koyach. So, but David says they should be, uses this metaphor in a negative way for them, is that when they sense the geula is coming, the Yeshua is coming, get out of here. Goodbye, get lost. They will completely cease to exist. Let's finish up the Malbim over here. Look over here. The Yu Doimim Kinefel Ish. Now he goes to the next part. The Yu Doimim Kinefel Ishas. Now what is that? So he learns like the second pshat in Rashi. We're dealing here with the Tinshemes, this creature which has no eyes, a mole, Sheretz, Shisum, Shisum Ha'ayin. Okay, that's what it says about Bilam. Bilam was Shisum Ha'ayin, was blind in one eye. Asher Balchozo Shemesh. The Yeish Lefarish also, Nefel Eishes. Now we go to a new pshat. A new pshat we have not yet learned. Nochosh Iver, a blind snake. In the Malbum, page 508. Second line from the bottom. Second line from the bottom of the Malbum, page 508. Minochash Iver. Okay, you recall, you know what that word, those words are? I can't read those words.
It's German.
What is it? A blinda shlecha? Blind snake. Shesku losaisha bin goya ishbo yiskashe ke'evan v'yipol lachatichos. When a person touches it, okay, a blind snake, it becomes hard like a rack. The yipol lachatichos, it falls into pieces. The nikur nefel al yidei nifilosa lachatichos. Okay, I'm not familiar with this. What?
Do you have a shell?
It's a snake.
No, so it says that it itself becomes hard like a rack and breaks into pieces and pieces fall off of it. Are you familiar with this? I'm not at all familiar with this thing. I know snakes, they shed their skin. Every so often, they shed their skin, but...
They shed their
house. Their house, the shell?
Yeah, they don't find it.
Okay. So here also, this is a blind snake, and its defense, or I don't know, its nature is that when a person touches a blind snake, it becomes hard. And it turns into a yiskashek ko'evan v'yipol l'chatichos v'nikon nefel al-yidein nefilosa l'chatichos v'eishes al-shem iv roinoi. Now look at this word. New mahalich in this pasuk. Fascinating. B'ishoin laila v'afela. The darkness of light, of night, and pitch black darkness. Two words. Ishoin laila. But ishoin is also used the pupil of the eye. The pupil of the eye is black. Universal. I'm sorry? Hamapil, wait. Ishoin bas oyin. Ishoin bas oyin. The ishoin bas oyin, and the word ishoin means the pitch black darkness of the night. So he is suggesting that the word over here of eshes is related to the word ishoin. Ishoin, the darkness, and in this case it means blindness. And from the context, we're dealing with a snake. How does he know that it's a snake? Well, maybe because the previous psukim, maybe because the previous psukim they were snakes, not necessarily, I don't know, but he says blind. Over here we're dealing with a blind creature that falls. So I guess the Malma is saying that if you look in the encyclopedia, the only blind creature that we know that falls into pieces and drops to the ground is a blind snake. Now, by the way,
it hardens up into a solid
mass,
and then it just cracks apart.
It cracks apart.
And it was probably the head and the main part just
they're
runs away.
Okay, that's what it's saying. That's why it's called Neufel. I guess the only place you have the word Neufel that would be appropriate with the word Ishoin, a creature that is blind, is a blind snake. A blind snake, it hardens and pieces of it are shed, they collapse, they fall to the earth. And that's what we're referring to here, Ritzoinoi Loimar. Ritzoinoi Loimar. Go back, we'll go to the next page, page 511. Oi Sheyimas Kamayim Benogoi Boy. It will. Oh, wait, what did I say? I'm in the right place?
Yeah.
Ritzoinoi Loimar. Oy sheyimas is going now back to the going to the shavlul. Oy sheyimas kamayim benogoy boy v'hanimshol al yidei havikuach shel David be'es shekora kenaf hamiil. When David cut off the corner of the garment of Shaul, oy yihyeh iver bilti roye, he was blind, he did not see. V'yiskasheh ko'evan v'imlo yiref yodov. If he does not let go of his hands, in other words, do not let go, yipol lachatichos, he will fall to pieces. This is going to take too much time to decipher. He's talking about Shaul. He's over here referring to the Maisa. Now, this is not where we started this Mizmar. In this Mizmar, we were not referring to this. There are two stories. There is a story where David was hiding in a cave with his men. They were hiding, and Shaul happened to take a detour to go to the Beis HaKisei. So he looked around, where is your private place? I can go to the Beis HaKisei. Oh, there's a cave here. He goes into the cave. And who is in the cave? David and his men. And they're in utter shock. Here, Shaul has entered the cave alone to go to the Beis HaKisei. He's vulnerable. There's no one, all of his, he has 3,000 men with him. 3,000 men guarding him. And Shaul says, Hischabdu mechubodim. Like when you say to the Malachim when you go to the Beis HaKisei, Meir always says this. Hischabdu mechubodim. You tell the Malachim, I have to go to the Beis HaKisei now. It's not Bakovedik. You should come with me. Stand outside and wait. I'll be with you shortly. So that's exactly what Shaul said to his 3,000 armed guards. Hischabdu mechubodim. I have to go to the Beis HaKisei. He goes to the Beis HaKisei. And who is in the Beis HaKisei? David and David's army. And they could have killed him right then and there. And David was a tzanua. He completely covered himself, even though he was all alone. No one was there. Which no one does today, completely covered himself, and his talis was lying, dragging on the ground, and David told his men, do not kill him, and instead he cut off the corner of the garment, and then when he left, he went further, and then he comes out and stands on top of the mountain and says, or whatever it was, the enclosure, look what I have! I could have just killed you! You came into my makom, and look, you see, I have nothing against you, stop trying to kill me, I have nothing against you. That was the previous Mizmar, Nun Zayin. In this Mizmar, we've dwelt upon a completely different story, where David was resting with his men in one place, and Shaul was somewhere else. And David noticed that everyone there fell asleep. They were just exhausted. They all fell fast asleep. And David, very heroically, he entered into their camp, and he took his Shaul's spear and a flask and a Poland Spring bottle of water. And he comes up and says, look what I got. I have your Purim costume and I have your Mishloach Manos. Look what I got. So yet over here, the Malbum, obviously in this interpretation, is not referring to that second story. According to what we learn, most of the Mefarshim learn that this Mizmar Nun Ches is dealing with the second story. And over here he's going back to the first story, and he's learning over here is that he's basically, without trying to decipher this right now, he's trying to tell me that you were blind. You were blind like a bat. My little cave to go to the Beis HaKisei, and you covered yourself with your talis, you were blind like a bat, and you didn't realize how vulnerable you are. Good morning, Rabbi Eliezer, leader friend. I saw you yesterday in Chaim Berlin.
Yes.
I saw you in the bleachers in the lower level. You were mamish. You were
crushed, taking
it in.
I was crushed.
So was I. You were taking, I had so much hanah. He was managing, he was absorbing the moment, the Kedusha.
I wanted to raise my hand and ask a question, but I decided not to.
Why not? Why not?
No, very beautiful.
Very beautiful.
But I think the Shiva really tries to block out the inappropriate people, but they always get in there.
Yeah.
Terrible, it's terrible.
Well, I didn't see anything. Well, how many people? What?
What?
I didn't see anything.
Crazy and makes noise.
Yeah.
Interrupted.
All right.
The Baron is always screaming, and they kept on going.
Who was screaming
there?
The Baron
was there.
No.
The Baron was there?
No.
Shloima. Or the previous years, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about this later. Any event, over here we have over here. So by the way, once we mention this, the Ishoin Bas Oyin, I love this part. I saw this in Rabbi Avraham Shur Sefer. Why is the pupil of the eye called the Ishoin Bas Oyin? So we learn right now. We say that it comes from the word the Eshes, the Nefel Eshes. The Eshes is a blind snake. And the word Eshes is taken from the word Ishoin. It's a sophisticated adaption of the word ishon, blindness. And the proof is, where do you have the word blindness or darkness of an ishon? The ishon laila, the ishon laila va'afela, the darkness of the night. And that we take to also, we borrow that word and we use it in reference to the pupil of the eye, which is black, which is very interesting. Where does the sight, I don't know how the eye works, it's one of the most fascinating organs, it is the most, by far the most fascinating.
Part of the brain, actually.
It's just mind-boggling. The eye is just, it's the flois habari. You have to be a real apikoris to it, to the nth degree, after studying how the eye works, to not acknowledge there is a creator.
Well, Mr. Ron is out.
Okay, the eye is unbelievable, and the pupil of the eye is obviously an extremely sensitive portion. It's black. No matter what color eyes you have, everyone has black pupils. There's no such thing. No such thing. Everyone has black pupils. The ishoin basoyin. So it's black because it's dark. There's a drush. I don't think it's pshat. Maybe it is pshat. I'm sure. I see in Lekach Haliva, one of his rami writes that the ishoin is the word ish. The nun, an end nun in Tanakh, very often connotes miniaturization. To miniaturize something, I forgot now. There are examples where you have, when you put a nun at the end of a word, it connotes to make a miniature of what you're dealing with. There are a number of examples that I can't think of any at this moment. Ketantan, okay, koton. But that's more of a repetition of the word koton. Adamdam, yirakrak, adamdam, ketantan. So there it's more of a, you're repeating the koton. You're repeating it really twice. But
like
medak. That's a repetition of the word. But there are examples in Tanakh. What?
Extra
clarification, extra precision. Okay, there you're repeating, but the nun, yeah, I have to show you some examples.
Koton means very small.
Yeah, but that's only because you're repeating the word koton. Koton means small. When you repeat the word koton twice, or the main syllable of the word koton, it's kitantan.
So
the word edoim, red. Adam dam. You repeat it twice. Dam dam. Right, just an end of a nun. So where do we have in Tanakh? You have a couple of times in Tanakh where you have words, unusual words that have the end of a nun. And the end of the nun is coming to connote miniaturization of what you're dealing with. I don't remember an example. I can't give you an example at this moment in time. What? Acharon, acharon, but that's the word. That word means the last. You're repeating the entire word. In a word itself, when you put an end nun at the end of the word, okay, Belin Ed, we'll come across it at some point in time. So here, Ishoin. What is the word Ishoin? Ish, Aleph, Yud, Shin, which means a man, followed by an end Nun, which means a miniature man, a little teeny man. When you look at someone in the eye, what do you see? You see yourself. A person's eye is glass. Basically, it's like glass. It's a mirror. It's a mirror. And what do you see? You see in the mirror, and it's round, so it creates miniaturization. You see yourself. You see a miniature little person. You see yourself. Ishoin, when you look at someone's eyes, you're looking in a mirror, and you're seeing a miniaturization of ish, of yourself. And that's why it's called Ishoin. It's called the Ishoin Bas Oyin. This little man in the person's eyes. I told you this many times. They're fascinated today. They have technology. I don't know if it works with digital photography, but in the olden days when they would take pictures with 35 millimeter film and all other types of film, so they're able now to take the negatives of these pictures, even very famous pictures. They did this with Kennedy. When they took picture of Kennedy in the Oval Office, they actually showed, it's incredible. They zoom in on his eyes with technology on the film, and they can see the other side of the room. They can see who the photographer was. They can see every. You take a picture, right? There's a picture. You take what you go to Chasna. They take a picture, and on the other side, the whole family is waiting for their turn. You can see a whole world. They look in the eyes of the subject, in the pupil, and they can see a mirror of everyone who's standing on the other side. It is unbelievable. And they do this in crime scenes also. In crime scenes, like how you're able to take a picture of someone, you can see by looking into the pupil what's going on the other side, who's at them. Now, you can't, honestly, you can't do this, you know, when you need some certain technology to go and magnify the eye. With digital photography, I don't think it works. Because the resolution, we're dealing with a third, the middle of the film, it's all there. It's just you need the magnification to see it. But you're dealing with digital photography, it's not there. You're just gonna see a digital. It's amazing how digital, we think we're so sophisticated today. We're less sophisticated today. You can take a picture today, you know, you can take a picture today, they showed by the inauguration of the president, the whole street, the whole area there, they can take a picture, one picture, they could be there in that picture, at least 100,000 people, and you can zoom in on every single person and see them with clarity. But you can't see who's taking the picture because the digital form does not capture the mirror image. It's a step down. The old-fashioned 35mm film can capture going backwards.
You can see into the picture.
You zoom into the person's eyes, and you see who took the picture. You can see the opposite side. It's a mirror. They do that. They've done that. Yeah, you go online, you Google this. You'll see it's incredible what they can do. But the point of it, it's called an ish shoin. Chazal already knew this. Chazal is an ish shoin. Is an ish, a little person. Is in the pupil of the eye. Okay, that's a side point over here. All right, let's maybe take a look over here. We'll do one of the pasuk. And then I want to talk about today about Shushan the Purim. We've heard some things about Shushan Purim. Hey, pasuk. First, let's do another pasuk. Pasuk Yud. B'terem yavinu si roi seichem otod kimoi chai kimoi choroin yis or renu. Another pasuk to break your teeth on. Which is very, very, each word in this puzzle because it also requires a lot of clarification. Let's first look at the Mitzudois. The Mitzudois Tzion. Pasik Yod. The first one he translates over here was the word Tziroi Seichem. Anfei HaKoitzim, the branches of thorns. Kimo Ad Sirim Sivuchim, thorns that are Sivuchim, that I think a thicket.
Before your tender briars develop into hardened thorns,
branches, right? So branches of thorns means that the thorns have actually matured. Okay, so the word siroi seichem in the Mitzudoi Tzion, as Rav Chol translated, is the anfei branches of thorns. Next word, otod. What does this word mean? Who? Matseves ilon hakoitz. This is the trunk of a thorn tree. The trunk of a thorn tree. V'chein v'yomer ho'otod el ho'etzim. The trunk said to the etzim, to the branches. Okay, the next... Sorry? The goyren ho'otod. Okay, so what does it mean in that context?
I don't have a word. That is somewhere in the branches,
right? No.
Is
it? The goyren ho'otod? No, I don't remember what the branches. I don't know. I really don't know. It sounds familiar. You're right, but I don't know. Ha'atod is the trunk. Chai in Brius is health. Ad chai yoisam. Yis orenu miloshon seora. This is more common. You have to interchange the samach and the sin. It means a storm. The imhi besin. Even though there's a sin, we know that we do it very often. We interchange the sin and the samach. Now let's look at the mitzudos David. Pasuk Yud b'terem ad lo yavinu anfei hakoitzim liyos miskashim kematzav ilan hakoitz, like Rav Michal said, before the little thorns, before the branches of the thorns, okay, they mature and turn into a trunk, into a thick portion, a branch you can still cut off easily. But once the branch already develops, matures, and gets bigger and hardens, that's it. You can't cut this off. You need a professional. You just can't do it with your bare hands. You need special tools. You need techniques. You need professionals. So ad lo yovinu, before they understood the anfi hakoytzim liyos miskashim ki matzav ilan hakoytz, like the matzav, like the trunk of a thorn tree. Rit soyne loymar ad lo yovinu bnei hodeshoim leharshia keivehem. That before the little wicked people, before the children, now he says over there, ke'evehem, is it a mistake? Ka'avihem? Is that a mistake? I'm not sure. It sounds like it's a mistake, right? Ke'avihem, it sounds like it should be like their parents, the children. Ad lo yavinu b'nei harashoim leharshia. What's that word over there? Ke'evehem, that means a pain. A ko'e means a pain. I think there's an error here in the nikud. I think it means ka'avihem, like their parents. Before the little guys become wicked like their parents, kimochai, kimoidavar hanekor al yidei odom bori, said that it's uprooted. Now he's using the word chai to mean uchmo hanekod bacharoin af, said that it's uprooted. Ki oz lo yishoer mu'umo, there's nothing left. Kein ye'akreim Hashem beruach sara loval yashir sheris shemino remnant. Now let's go back to the pasuk. Dov is making a request for Hashem to nip his enemies in the bud. To nip them in the bud. Like a ben soirer umoire. This is a sugya. This is the sugya ben soirer umoire. That if the kid already exhibits signs of being a ganav, you have to watch out. The day will come when it'll be a murderer. Hashem, in many psukim tell us, when you come into Eretz Canaan, get rid of the Canaanim. Because if you don't, if you're going to have rachmanis on them, they're going to be l'sikim b'einechem u'litzininim b'tzideichem. If you don't get rid of these rascals, they're going to be thorns in your eyes and sharp objects in your side. And that's exactly what it says over here. David over here is saying, Hashem, these people that were shun, get rid of the young before they develop and become even more wicked. B'terem yovinu siroi seichem otod kamba. Before the little branches of thorns, before they develop the knowledge to figure out how to become big and very wicked, compared to the thickness of the trunk of the thorn tree, kimochai. Now here's where it gets a little more difficult. Cut them down, kimochai, like something. Let's go again the mitzvah stuff. Kimo dover hanekor al the other market. Kimochai means a gezunta. He's learning over here. Kimochai means the wood chopper. How much wood can a wood chopper chuck if a wood chopper would chuck wood?
Wood
chopper.
What? Wood chopper.
Wood chuck. How much wood can a wood?
That's how I remember Rabbi Woodchuck's name.
Woodchuck. Kimochai, like a healthy, gesunder, starker behema. A strong person. When a strong person cuts down the tree, it's gone. Now this always reminds me of this horrible story. Is that someone someone always told me they went to a funeral. It was in the middle of the winter. It was bitter cold. And they went to Rachman al-Sun to bury a person. And as you know, the minhag is that whatever it is, it's an inyan that the person should be buried by Jewish people, by frum people. So they put the coffin in, they lowered the coffin, and the frum people started to cover the coffin. And it was very, very cold, freezing cold, and there weren't many people there. And very quickly, they ran out of koyach. So they stood back, and the goyim who worked there in the cemetery, in 10 seconds.
They used the
bulldozer. No, even without the bulldozer. Sometimes it's in a very difficult location. Sometimes the kever is in a very it's in the middle of many, so it's not so easy to do. So the goyim took over, and they buried the person in no time, in the freezing winter, and the earth was all was solid.
Right.
1, 2, 3. And the comment they all said to each other is, a goy They know how to bury Jews very quickly. Okay, it's like, unfortunately, so that's what it's saying over here is kimo chai. These behemoths, these people, this is what they meant, this is what they do. These guys, they got muscles, and when they chop down a tree, the tree's gone. The tree's gone. You go get some yeshiva guys, you know, don't know what they're doing. They start cut off. Oh no. Like the tree is still here. The tree has gone nowhere. I went to someone last night, I went to someone in Mishach Manas, and he showed me his new house. Well, yeah, that new house. And he showed me what he did, and he showed me that in this living room there's a big thing which comes out. This whole area. So he said, you know, when we did the renovation, we wanted to really take out the whole thing. It should be nice and straight. There's a chimney over here. So the chimney, you don't need a chimney because the boiler is not here. Got some ice. So we started, the contractor started taking it out. And then he says, the contractor very scared.
He knew what he's doing.
He got very scared. The yeshiva's a contractor.
Wait, that's the problem.
Exactly.
A chimney is thousands and thousands of pounds of brick that will come down. When you cut that down on the bottom, it will
kill you.
Thousands
no,
of
so he started doing it, whatever. I don't know the details. And he started, the goal was to take down the whole thing. And he started doing a little bit, and he got petrified.
He can't cut the chimney and think, oh, the rest will just stay up.
He got petrified, and not only did he not take it down, he ended up fortifying it. The plan was to get the whole thing out of there. And then we saw what a job this is. You know what? Not only are we not taking it down, we're gonna even make it better. We're going to make it even stronger. So that's the opposite. Kimo chai, someone who's a gesunter person, and he knows what he's doing, he's going to get rid of this. What the Torah is saying is, when we wipe out my enemies, we're not going to go and bring in some unlicensed contractor who doesn't know what they're doing and is going to, you know, chisel away a little bit. We're going to bring in the big machines. We're going to kimo chai. A healthy, strong person is going to cut down and remove this tree, this thorn tree, from its roots. Kimo choroin, like choroin. What is the idea of choroin? Back in the Mitzvah is David. Kimo dover hanek al yidei odom bori. Uchma nekar, and a person is angry. Okay, when you're angry, you do a good job. If you're in a good mood, you'll chop a little bit. When you're furious, you cut away to the roots. Kimo choron yis orenu, it should be uprooted like a massive storm has come and taken it out. This is very poetic, a very powerful metaphor. Again, over here, we're dealing over here with his enemies. And the way the Tzudas does add in, where did I read from that, it says about the parents, and that's the beginning of the pasuk, is that W here is saying is that over here I have enemies. My enemies are already beginning to train young terrorists. They always show us in the news, the Palestinians, you don't like the word Palestinians, the Arabs. Rachel does not let me say the word Palestinians. The Arabs, In Eretz Yisrael, they show them in kindergarten, dressed up in these outfits of Hamas with these rifles, and they teach them from their youth to hate, to kill. They brainwash them. It's horrific, and this pasuk is addressing exactly that. Rip out these people before they get old enough to become a real threat. They're being trained now in their youth to be like their parents, and who knows, they'll outdo their parents, they'll be even more wicked, more violent. Beterem before Yovinu Siroi Seichem Otod, before the young thorns learn how to become the thick trunk, hardened and thick like the trunk of the thorn tree, get rid of them. And don't just do a bandage job of going, taking out one or two and making some nonsense speech in the UN. Get rid of them like kimo chai, like a healthy, strong person comes to do the job right. Kimo choron, don't be polite. Don't be polite. There's no room over here when you want to uproot a terrorist. There's no niceties. Like a person is angry, and you do it with fury, force. Don't be nice. There's no politeness over here. You're dealing with a Russia. That's the problem we have today. With all, everything has to be politically correct. Don't be politically correct when you wipe out your enemy. That's really what it means, k'moy choroin. You're angry. When you're angry, you're not looking to be politically correct. You're looking to get it done. Done quickly and precisely and to finish the job. Yis orenu, and you do it with force, with power, with they say shock and awe. Shock and awe. It's an incredible pasuk. You have to uproot the children, it says here in Rashi. In the Mitzudos, the children, the young, have to be uprooted before they develop into adults who are lethal. And when they are uprooted, when they're young, it has to be done with force, with health, without political correctness, with a force of shock and awe to make sure the job is done right. That's what it says here. It's an incredible pasuk. David knew something that today, unfortunately, all the politicians of the world don't know.
Look what Rashi is doing.
Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi pasuk yud. Rashi pasuk yud. B'terem yavinu sira sechem otod asher. B'terem yedu koitzim rakim. Before the soft thorns. Shelochem liyois atodim koshim. Atodim is the trunk that is hard. Kiloimar. Ad shelo yigdalu b'nei horishoyim. Before the young develop. K'mochai k'moy choroyim. Kiloimar. Rip them out. Destroy them, bigavura, as a healthy person takes on the mission, uvichoizek, with power, uvichoroin, with anger, yis oreim, uproot them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may you uproot them, chai l'shoin gibor, similar to what it said in the mitzvahs. Powerful stuff. All right, we're going to stop over here, take a short break, and then we're going to learn a little bit about Shushan the Purim. V'ho'ir Shushan, Tzohala v'samecha.
Glasses up.